You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 9 July. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Viv Govender, markets commodities down 4% yesterday, and multi-choice runs into Nigeria shakedowns. Stefano Marani, CEO of Renergen, path to profitability and also the helium story, a deep dive on that. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with our investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, Imperial to be delisted if DP World's proposed almost $13 billion acquisition is finalized. And one of the analysts is saying Imperial hold shareholders should take the offer and be very thankful. Yes, no, maybe. I don't know. We're losing a lot of quality stocks, and if someone else wants it, I always wonder, well, maybe then so do I. Business day, Nigerian jinx strikes again in MultiChoice's 63 billion rand tax bill. The stock was off about 7% after the banks have been asked to help recover 63-odd billion ZAR that the revenue service says is owed by MultiChoice. Morning markets, lots of red. US S&P down 0.9, S&P off 0.6%. Asia, we've got Sydney down 1.3 and Tokyo off 1.6. Commodities mixed overnight, but gold looking good at $1,806 an ounce. Rand 14.34, and top 40 looking for about 210 points to the green. That's about 0.35%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money, also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Viv Govender, a portfolio manager at Rand Swiss. Viv, morning, appreciate the early morning time. Yesterday our Resi 10 index took an absolute pounding, 10% off, sorry, 4% off on the day, 10% off the highs from back in March. What's your sense of what's happening here? Commodity prices are broadly holding, yet the market is not convinced.
We did discuss thing a while back about the fact that the Chinese are trying to make commodity prices a bit, put pressure on them. I think some of those measures are working. Also, we are talking about, you know, prices that have been rising for about a year, so a break was, you know, warranted. And we also have some issues right now, but within our growth is like recovering at the rate that we wanted to, and that may also be helping us push prices down.
So, I mean, in essence, it is. I mean, we've been chatting about the commodity story for a whole bunch. This is more than anything the market perhaps looking out to late this year and into 2022 and saying, you know what, if demand's not quite there, if China's sort of managing it and pulling out some stockpiles, then perhaps the commodity bull run that we've seen is closer to end.
Possibly, but I think that might be mistaken. My one point for higher commodity prices is the fact that, you know, as we get out of this pandemic, most governments around the world want to get growth back up and running. Mm-hmm. And one of the most popular ways to do that is infrastructure plans. So you have the US massive multi-trillion dollar infrastructure plan, because you look around the world and that's been a plan that everybody's trying to get on the bandwagon for. Everyone wants to build infrastructure to get the growth back because it sounds good politically and it also kind of makes sense economically if it does work out properly.
I hear you on that, and it has been, and that has actually been the sort of the story. And I suppose then it boils down to if you subscribe to the infrastructure spend, and you mentioned Biden's talking trillions of dollars. We're certainly hearing anecdotal evidence locally. Europe not quite there yet, but in time. If we subscribe to this idea around the infrastructure, then if anything, this is opportunity in our commodity space.
Yeah, most probably. I mean, I do think that even in Europe and around the world, anyone that can afford it is going to try and put infrastructure. Even people that can't quite afford it is going to put infrastructure on the table, just because it sounds good. You know, we grew slowly, now we're growing faster. Now we're trying to recover this growth rate back to where we should have been, make up for that last year or two. Let's build more bridges. Let's repair our bridges. Let's build new railway lines, etc. I think that's something politically that just sounds too attractive to be missed.
Yeah, now here, yeah, an infrastructure typically worth a shot. News out from MultiChoice yesterday afternoon that they've run into the Nigeria woes. I mean, Nigeria is a bit of a graveyard for South African stocks. We've seen a number, Woolies, Tiger Brands, Telkom, others try and spectacularly fail. Even ShopRite. Now we've got the sort of MTN woes where the Nigerian government is allegedly saying we want 64 billion ZAR in backdated tax. It's almost, I mean, as a business, as an investor, it has start to make Nigeria almost just not an option. I mean, yes, it's a big market. Yes, it's a growing market. But the regulators seem to just come, not even cap in hand. They sort of come and say, give us money.
Yeah, and it's not just, you know, South African companies. I mean, we recently had Twitter being banned because of a tweet from Uri Bihari that was deleted. And here's the real issue, right? I mean, Nigeria has so much potential. I mean, I was just reading up like a while back and an article on this about the tech sector in Africa. And there's like, you know, a real tiny Silicon Valley happening in Nigeria. I think they had, companies that valued the region about $2 to $3 billion. In a single kind of like little neighborhood that they have basically created like a kind of mini Silicon Valley going on there. And it's not just a Nigerian story. I mean, I think in the last couple of years, there have been something like about 6 or 7 African unicorns, which is African companies that have a valuation of more than $1 billion that are startups. And that's starting to happen. We are seeing people like Jeff Bezos investing in Africa. There's a real opportunity out there. But if you as Nigeria want to go out and, you know, trying to do these silly kind of things, like, you know, for instance, ban Twitter, you know, have these retroactive tax issues, you really are going to be kind of like, you know, force companies to move out of your, you know, you're quite attractive and what should have been the ideal place to be. Move to places like Ghana or Kenya or South Africa, obviously you want to get whatever you can get. But you are kind of like missing the real opportunity out there, which is quite disappointing.
Yeah, it is. And companies are going to have long, hard looks and think to themselves, you know, do they want to play in that space? Quick last question. Imperial delisting yesterday, losing another stock from our JSE. And this is, I mean, it's one of the, I was digging around, scratching around some US companies over the weekend. The vastness of offshore markets in terms of sectors and specialities contrasted with a small to start and shrinking JSE. I mean, the JSE has a real problem. I mean, sure, not always their fault, but I mean, its relevance is whittling away.
Yeah, it is, and it also, I mean, this is not something that's just South Africa. I mean, I think there's these issues overseas as well. I mean, we are seeing, you know, the inability of the average person to access some of these opportunities out there. You know, in terms of growth in the market and growth in the economy. In South Africa, you know, if we take out the, you know, Imperial, we take out, you know, like in the past, we take out Eggers, of course, that wasn't a bad thing for shareholders, definitely, in the longer term. But yeah, look, I mean, there are fewer companies available in terms of, you know, fewer opportunities to invest, fewer ways to access growth in the economy and in the market. It does hurt shareholders, the average shareholders. Larger institutions, larger shareholders probably could buy it directly. But it's more the retail shareholder out there that's going to be negatively affected by these kind of things. I'm reminded by, I don't know if you see this, but Peter Thiel has turned effectively a couple $1,000, you know, retirement plan, a Roth IRA, into I think it's like a $5 billion investment. Just by basically putting a whole bunch of like private companies in that thing. And that just shows the opportunity out there. If you're able to access the market, you can do incredible things, obviously. But there was going to be Peter Thiel. But if you have a market that's smaller, that's shrinking, that in terms of the number of things you can invest in, it just reduces your ability to actually go out and, you know, get the kind of growth that you need to, you know, plan your retirement and that kind of stuff. It's quite disappointing from the point of the retail investor.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It leaves us less choice. It leaves us, I take your point, less ability to actually turn a profit. Viv Govender, Portfolio Manager at Rand Swiss, appreciate your early morning, sir. We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insight into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider, license number 719.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Stefano Moroni, he's CEO of Renogen. Disclaimer up front, I hold shares in Renogen. Stefano, I appreciate the early morning. I want to try and get a sense of processes and timelines of getting productions phase one and two. And obviously our focus here is Renogen, but you know, there's a bigger story as to how we understand how sort of mining or this sort of business gets to that capacity. As I understand, currently phase one, I mean, where are you with that? That's your sort of early part, sort of almost a proof of concept around the business.
Good morning. Yes, correct. So phase one has always been a proof of concept, both for us and for the United States. Obviously, phase one was funded by a loan from the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, mm-hmm. or now the Developmental Finance Corporation, DFC. Proof of concept, you take it with a pinch of salt. It's still almost a billion rand investment. It's about just over 800 million rand. And that goes into operation this financial year for us. Mm-hmm. We're talking about getting gas into the plant during the fourth quarter and then putting gas in trucks and moving it around to customers shortly after that. That is the equivalent, just to put it in energy, in the form of energy that people can think about. Phase one will be producing somewhere about 75,000 liters of diesel equivalent of energy per day.
Wow. Okay. And that proof of concept is both that there is what is expected in the ground, and obviously you've done the research, you've done the digging, you've said there is. It's proof of concept that there's something in the ground. It's also, I imagine, a to a degree, you know, you and your team, can you deliver on this and actually make it happen?
Yeah, so I think the proof of concept wasn't necessarily so much as to what was sitting underground. I think we've got proven reserves, mm-hmm. and proven resources, so that's there. I think the proof of concept was more whether or not corporate South Africa could adopt a gas economy. The other part of it is obviously the helium. So phase one produces 350 kilograms of helium per day, which, although it doesn't sound like a lot, you got to appreciate that the gas is A, incredibly expensive, B, insanely rare, mm-hmm. and 350 kilograms is about 1.5 times South Africa's entire consumption. So it's meaningful.
A very, very large amount of gas balloons at the same time, because, of course, helium to me is always those birthday balloons. I like your point about adopting a gas economy, and that is a shift. I mean, our economy has been hydrocarbons, you know, oil, and what you says the LNG, and you've got the idea, you've got your cryogenics, you've got talking around trucks. I remember running on LNG. I remember the refrigerated trucks. You've got some IP around that. There is a fair bit of a sort of shift within the broader economy. Is that shift happening? Are you seeing customers who are saying, yeah, hang on, this actually looks like something worth trying?
So, I mean, you know, you touched on Imperial a little earlier, and yeah. You know, the fact that foreigners are now starting to see value in South Africa. I think that is an increasing trend, and what you're going to see is that as these foreigners start to come in, they are going to start enforcing their ESG on South African yeah. companies. Mm-hmm. We are a dirty economy. We're a filthy economy. And what we are seeing is that internationally, globally, the push and the move from diesel to gas is unprecedented. And the reason for this is that whilst EV is great for your and my car eventually on the road, you cannot power a big 51 ton combination payload truck with EV. It's not, even if you were to reach the theoretical limit mm-hmm. of what a battery can store, it will never be economically viable under South African conditions. So people need alternatives. You need a higher energy density, and this is where LNG comes into it.
Okay. And then phase two. So you raised some cash last month going towards phase two, and this is, you've got your proof of concept. You're now doing a more detailed feasibility around it, and then you'll start rolling what is a significantly larger, particularly in the helium space, phase two project for Renogen in your fields.
That's correct. So, you know, we obviously had a drilling campaign.
Mm-hmm.
That drilling campaign was monumentally successful, way, way, way more successful than we thought. And now all of the data from the wells that we drilled has gone over to our reservoir engineers in the US. They're busy crunching the numbers. We've gotten two engineering teams, SIPEM and EPCM, to start designing what phase two will look like and what the feasibility studies will look like. That will then also go over to our reservoir engineers. And then we're hoping in the coming, you know, coming 1 to 2 months, we will be able to announce to the market exactly A, what is sitting underground in terms of just pure raw molecules that are economically viable to extract.
Mm-hmm.
And then B, what phase two looks like. And yeah, obviously then all of the associated financing mechanisms and whatnot. But we're pretty confident that we're going to have, we're working towards a timeline of turning phase two on in 2023. And as you said, that we see as being the game changer when Renergen truly puts its mark on the South African energy mix.
Yeah, at this point, and no disrespect into it, at this point, it's sort of startup / ramp up. 2023.
Of course.
Yeah,
we're tiny.
Yeah,
we're tiny.
And 2023 is like, that's just around the corner. That is quite close. I want to quickly pivot to the helium story, which I ran into a few years ago, maybe 3 years ago. I'm reading results from Party Shack in the US, and they say really, really bad numbers because we couldn't get hold of any helium, and therefore no helium balloons, and therefore their sales suffered during that particular period. Helium's got quite a wild story. I mean, it's been a strategic reserve in the US, although as I understand, they then reversed that and then sort of looked to reverse. I mean, the helium story in the US has been a wild ride, particularly in the last decade or so, as they unstrategic reserve it.
You couldn't get a team of fiction writers in a room, even if you took the team from Game of Thrones, they would not be able to make up a more fantastical story than helium. So yes, you're right. It started off just before World War I. U.S. Secretary of Defense borrowed money from the Fed to build a strategic reserve in Amarillo in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was to make aircraft for logistics and for bombing. And then that was pretty much the only use for helium. It was lifting. And then Oppenheimer came along, not our Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer in the U.S. came mm-hmm. along in World War II. And whilst on paper everything looked good, he couldn't actually build anything without the helium. And so the Secretary of Defense borrowed a lot more money and built a really, really large helium reserve. And then with the Cold War, obviously, that required an inordinate amount of helium. And it got to the point where the Fed wanted its money back. So the Fed started asking, it put together this act called the Helium Stewardship Act, which forced the reserve to auction off helium commercially. Now, what they didn't predict was that shortly after putting that act together, MRIs were invented, and MRIs use an inordinate amount of helium, both in their manufacture and their operation. You cannot do an MRI or a CAT scan without helium. It's not possible. And so that literally led to the point where helium consumption vastly exceeded fresh supplies of helium coming out the ground, with the result that it ended up depleting this reserve. And as you said, 2018, the United States government declared helium the second most critical element to United States national security. It's a problem. It's a real problem. There are senators and congressmen that are looking to have the Macy's helium balloon parade banned in the United States.
In order to save on, because that's just it. I mean, helium was lifting, but these days it is equally a part of medical. We'll leave it there. Stefano Marani, CEO of Renergen, trying to get a sense of how you go from greenfields sort of mining to final production. 2023, that's 2 years just around the corner. We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insight into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider, license number 719.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
That's it for today. Our poll yesterday on our LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook social media accounts. We'd been chatting with Gary Boydson about Disney, and we asked if you owned it, if you liked it. And it was an even split between yes, you do, no, there are better than Disney, shame, poor Mickey Mouse, and that you definitely you do want to. The poll today, we're asking around the resi, I mean, the massive sell-off, should you be worried? Viv Govender says probably not, but maybe you are, or maybe you do think it's a blip. LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, you can have your vote, you can have your say there. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Please visit stanlib.com to get in touch with our investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Reminder, we are live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7 a.m. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Cordora, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.